and local.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Going to start our transition over to NBA, but, you know, got to surprise Chris as we like to do on this show and give him some time to talk Vikings and his thoughts, because it connects to everything, really, as far as what the Niners ended up doing, what the Raiders ended up doing. But first, let's get to Dale, who's been patiently waiting over the line. Thanks again to Emilio Fragoso, of course. Let's get to Dale, 916-339-1140. All guests and callers join us from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. What's up, Dale? What you got for us?
Oh, thanks for taking my call, guys. I love your show.
Thank you.
You know, you make my drive every day way, way more enjoyable.
Appreciate that, Dale.
Thank you, Dale.
Right on, right? Okay, so now you mentioned that we're in transition. I was going to just make a comment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But since we're in transition between NFL and NBA, I just have to touch on NBA as well.
Sure.
Oh, beautiful. Comment. Why not?
Okay, all right. So my first comment was, I just had like this weird premonition, okay? I'm a big fantasy sports player, so I draft all these teams, and I play DFS, and I do all this crazy stuff. And Brandon Ayuk is going to end up in Kansas City. I'm telling you right now. I think that, and this might be ignorant on my part, because I don't know all the salary cap issues that come into play with that, but I think Patrick Mahomes would adjust his contract, renegotiate his contract to bring in a guy like Brandon Ayuk. And I think that the 49ers are way more willing to let him go than pay him what he deserves to be paid. All right. So then, and then my last thing, Kings, I'll make it quick. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best thing to happen to the Kings this year was to miss the playoffs, because Monty McNair almost dodged a bullet by then almost getting into the playoffs through the play-in.
Mm-hmm.
But no, not now. You can't run it back again. And I'll take, you know what? Thank you for taking my call. And I'll listen to what your comments on off the air, okay?
Appreciate it, Dale.
Thanks for the call, Dale. Yeah, the Monty McNair thing, I feel like we've kind of gone over. The Warrior, any team that missed the playoffs, I think, that were on the verge, and, oh, should we run it back or not? A lot of fans would say, basically the argument is, you're not going to win the whole thing, so let's quit the facade and just lose and hit the reset button. So agree with you there, Dale. As far as the Brandon Ayuk thing is concerned, if I'm not mistaken, Brandon Ayuk is still under contract.
Yes.
For this season.
For this season, yeah.
So it's not as if they can just say, we're not paying you, and then he walks. Maybe Dale meant not this season specifically.
Or maybe trading.
We just talked to Emil Fragoso during the break, and I said, we've been talking more about Debo now. Hey, where are the places that the Niners would not send Debo? So you can put Ayuk into the same category. First word, I think, was either the Chiefs or the Cowboys. Those are the first two. And then after that, it was the Lions and the divisional
Rams.
Opponents. Yeah. And then any NFC, the only AFC team I think that they would not trade Brandon Ayuk to would be the Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs also got Hollywood Brown this offseason, and then they just drafted Xavier Worthy.
Exactly.
That's not to say they wouldn't welcome Brandon Ayuk with open arms. I find it very hard if we're talking about this season and a trade is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're talking about if Brandon Ayuk became a free agent, sure. But there is no way on this green earth that the Niners would trade Ayuk to that team.
Right.
That's the only AFC team that they would not trade him to.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. I just think it's, from Dale's perspective of, like, definitely for fantasy football, it would be incredible. Like, if you drop a guy like Ayuk in the Chiefs system, I mean, that's definitely a guy that everybody wants, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's going to probably be one of the leading receivers in the NFL in terms of yards, in terms of everything. I mean, him and Patrick Mahomes running deep balls would be ridiculous. But, yeah, everything you just said is definitely true. I think if the Chiefs were going to do that, they probably would have done it yesterday. And like you said, instead of moving up and taking Xavier Worthy, they probably would have just maneuvered to make that move with the Niners directly and gotten Ayuk instead of getting the rookie. So I kind of think that ship has sailed. And onto the Monty thing, it's definitely something that we've talked about before. Definitely, I would say, in a weird way, not making the playoffs, you can say a blessing in disguise, because, like you said, I mean, you're not going to run it. There's no way you can run it back after missing the playoffs. There's no way you can say, yeah, sign me up for actually another year of that. It kind of forces your hand into saying, okay, we cannot afford to have another bad season, or even risk it potentially falling, the floor falling out from under us like it kind of did this year. It almost forces you to say, okay, we have to make a big move in order to make sure that what happened last year doesn't happen again, and job security as well. You want to make sure that, you know, if you have two bad years in a row, somebody's probably getting fired. If you have a bounce back year, you kind of buy yourself some time, of course.
Right, and we are quickly approaching the bounce back year. From the 9-1-6, the Chiefs let go of Tyreek Hill because they didn't want to pay him.
It's a good point.
Why would they want to pay now? It's a good point.
I don't think it's as much as Tyreek would have wanted, but
right,
yeah.
Right, right, yeah. And Tyreek definitely got the bag. All right, Chris, floor is yours. Your initial thoughts. Take us through where you were at, your thought process. Emil said you went dark on social media during that time, and you hear the words, J.J. McCarthy, and now you are grinding film, just like grinding. Caleb Williams. You woke up at 6 a.m. to film.
Well,
you went to bed at 3 a.m., then woke up at there 6 to grind more film. How were you initially feeling?
Yeah.
And then you slept on it. How are you feeling now about J.J. McCarthy going to Minnesota?
Yeah, so as we exited the show yesterday, I said, do what you can. Move up to number three. Get Drake May. That's the guy that the Vikings had diagnosed as their guy that Kevin O'Connell thought would be the quarterback that he wanted to take this team into the future. Ultimately, I could be upset about them not doing it, but at the end of the day, the Patriots clearly weren't going to move on from that pick, so there's not really much you could do. You know, I'm sure maybe in Minnesota right now they have callers saying, oh, I can't believe Kwesi didn't do everything. What's another first-round pick? I don't think any of that mattered. I don't think the Patriots were taking any phone calls seriously, and you would have probably had to throw something completely ridiculous at them in order for it to happen. So initially, as the third pick goes on, doesn't seem like the Vikings are going to trade up. The Patriots make the Drake May selection. I can't lie, I was incredibly disappointed. After you kind of build up all of this hype for somebody for it to just kind of end up being for nothing, definitely sucked. Definitely sucked to go through for a bit. But, you know, it then kind of turns into I have to view Kwesi's draft as what it is. I mean, he didn't give up. It wasn't a, hey, this is our only move and there's no pivot from that. Clearly, they had other options that they had looked at. And I think ultimately, you get J.J. McCarthy for not giving up much. I know they moved up one spot in order to get him, but ultimately you didn't risk much. I know they got rid of some future second and third round picks, but you know, you get a guy who's got some traits for sure. Everyone's going to point out the winning and the lack of turning the ball over and all the Brock Purdy stuff and, you know, Tom Brady comparisons, all that stuff that makes sense. And yeah, you know, the pick happens. I'm not super excited about it. I ended up watching, there's a shout out YouTube, which is just fantastic. Apparently John Lynch is also a big YouTube watcher, but I watched a YouTube compilation last night, every run and throw J.J. McCarthy made in the 2023 season. And,
how long was that?
It's a 43 minute video and I'm 30 minutes in. I think I've gotten through the first eight and a half games of J.J. McCarthy's season. And I would just say I was very, very pleasantly surprised. I was expecting, because the narrative around him is I'll use one of your words, he's a handoff merchant, right? Like, he's just pounding the rock every time. Oh, got a great, one of the best play action guys you'll see. And that's what I was expecting to see, is just a lot of dump offs, a lot of throwing it to the line of scrimmage. I was shocked to find the amount of down-the-field throws, the amount of zip that he has on his ball. And there's a lot of throws where, especially in college, the reason why I hate watching college quarterbacks is because you'll be told, random stray here, but like a guy like Bo Nix, you're told, oh, he's such a great quarterback, all this stuff. You watch him throw, and there's a lot of ducks. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of air underneath those balls. J.J. McCarthy zips that thing. And it was something I was really pleasantly surprised. And just a lot of really well-timed throws and just not a lot of incompletions either. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, again, the video I watched was not just highlights. It was
this
not
was
just
every
completions.
Throw.
It was every throw, good and bad. Just not a lot of incompletions. And to me, it's about Kevin O'Connell now. Like, he's got his quarterback. It was Kwesi's job to get the quarterback in the building. He did that. It's now on Kevin O'Connell to figure out, look, if this guy's okay, you got to make it work. Because, again, Brock Purdy has set the model. The Vikings have the talent. You got Aaron Jones in your backfield. You got Justin Jefferson, the best receiver in the NFL. Jordan Addison, who's definitely coming up. TJ Hockenson, who's a top five receiving tight end in the NFL. And I said it yesterday, you have two tackles, Christian Darrisaw and Brian O'Neill, who are, you know, they're, again, top five at their position. You have enough to make it work. It's just about making it work. It's the same thing as Brock Purdy. Just get the ball in your playmaker's hands and let them do the rest. It's as good of a situation as a rookie can walk into. And yeah, you know, if he's bad, he's bad. That's the good of the Vikings not having to go up and make that Godfather offer for Drake May. If they're bad this year and J.J. McCarthy ends up being a bust or looking like a bust, you do what the Cardinals did. You take Josh Rosen, doesn't work out. You get a high pick next year and you take Kyler Murray. So ultimately, it's a risk. I don't think it's the guy that the Vikings ultimately super wanted, but it's somebody that they're willing to make it work with. And after watching the tape, I think he can make it work. It's just a matter of how high his ceiling is really what I'm seeing a lot of people have concerns about. It's not really the guy he is now. It's how much more meat is really left on the bone. I'm not sure the Vikings need a lot more meat left.
Six quarterbacks were taken last night.
Yep.
We know the numbers. We've been saying them ad nauseum. 46% of QBs drafted up until 2019, sure, signed that second deal. That's about 50%. So six quarterbacks taken. Based on this, three of them will be franchise guys. Three of them will not.
Does Chris have his franchise guy? That's my point, is it doesn't have to be a franchise guy. I don't think that's where I got upset, is they didn't go get that franchise prototype guy in the Drake May, like the 6'4", big body, got the legacy
they
family.
They think it's a franchise
all
guy,
that
though.
Stuff. I think they're hoping he's a franchise guy, but like JJ is somebody who's going to be like Kirk Cousins, where I don't think he's going to elevate above the team. He's not a Josh Allen. He's not a Patrick Mahomes. He's not a Joe Burrow even. But he's somebody who still, I mean, just because you're not a top three doesn't mean you're a bad quarterback. It's just they got a guy who can play quarterback for them. It's a position at the end of the day. It doesn't have to be a super mega star at that position if you have other good talent. So ultimately, they didn't get a guy that you have and you don't have to worry about all those other pieces. They got a guy that just plays a position on the football field that hopefully can do his job.
There you go. And hopefully he can do his job. When we return, getting into some basketball, Jokic has some insightful words on how to build up a contender and how that connects back to the Sacramento Kings, also breaking down all the action in the NBA and bringing it back to some Beam team. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Jokic and the Lakers. Two things. It's like oil and water if you're the Lakers. I'm going to tell you this much, Chris. I cannot believe the Lakers are on the verge of getting swept.
Why not? It happened last year.
That's why. And AD from literally as soon as it happened, you had AD saying, oh yeah, we have something for them. And honestly, LeBron didn't say too much.
He did. Last year, he said a lot. That's where I Am the Sun came from, because him and Mike Malone were going back and forth.
But as far as we're going to get them next year, I don't know if LeBron ever ventured into that, because I don't think he thought.
He said a lot of, keep talking now.
Right.
There was a lot of that.
Yeah. So, yeah, LeBron. Yeah. So this is from Sam Amick. LeBron going at Malone on Instagram. Yes. AD talking at camp. This blank ain't over. That was from Darvin Ham. And Sam Amick.
It's over.
Sam Amick goes on to say, newsflash, this blank is over.
Sam is the best. I can't wait. It's crazy. You know LeBron read that too.
How does that happen?
It's hilarious. Because the Nuggets are great, man. Like, that's the thing is, is, you know, they cannot stop Nikola Jokic. And at the end of the day, like, I do think a bit of this, too, is people sleep on Mike Malone. Like, I when we looked at that player survey, don't remember Michael Malone being on that list, period.
Right.
Which is insane to me. So, like, I mean, when you think about the fact the Nuggets have a better coach, they have a better big man, and they just, I mean, I think they play better as a team. I think they have better, like a better team structure around them. To me, it makes tons of sense. I mean, this is exactly what we saw last year. Bron and AD aren't enough. They don't have the defensive fortitude, definitely, to keep other guys besides Jokic. I mean, yeah, you've got AD to put on Jokic, but how are they going to stop Jamal Murray when you have one of the worst defensive guards in D'Angelo Russell? That's why they brought in Gabe Vincent.
A donut last night, by the way.
Terrible.
0 points.
And did you see that video of him sitting on the side of
yes,
the huddle?
Yes, he was eating, like, trail mix.
I was trying to figure out, I was like, is he eating? Is he, like, clipping his nails like eating, Mike Bibby? What's going on?
He was
on?
Eating trail mix, and before that game, crazy. He said, I think he was on Sirius NBA, and he said something to the effect of, yeah, I mean, if you, I've been doing it all season long, and he talked about the first game, how he didn't play well. And then he says, and then you see what I did in the second game, and I plan to do it in game three.
I'm not calling him D-Lo. I'm calling him D-Lou now because he's delusional. It's insane, bro. This guy thinks he is like a top five. He legit thinks he's like Kyrie Irving. I swear on everything.
Yes.
D'Angelo Russell thinks he's at the tier of Kyrie.
And I have to talk about this. So this is bad news for Kings fans, I got to say. This is bad news for Kings fans. And this is real, by the way. This is from Bovada. These are the team odds for D'Angelo Russell for next season. Shortest odds, Atlanta Hawks. So just go in order.
Oh, that's interesting.
Atlanta Hawks, Charlotte Hornets, Los Angeles Lakers, Chicago Bulls, Los Angeles Clippers, Portland Trailblazers, Washington Wizards, the Utah Jazz, any European team, that's
insane.
Any European team,
that's insane.
The Guangdong Southern Tigers.
Shut the hell up. There's
that's
no
a plus 3,000.
There's no way.
Dude.
They got this man going to China.
Let's go.
Guangdong Southern Tigers.
And it's also, yeah, the fact that it's a specific.
Yes. It's not any Chinese team.
Any European team. Yeah.
There's
specifically
more. There's more.
Chinese
at plus 3,000, the Guangdong Southern Tigers. At plus 5,000, the Taiwan Beer Leopards.
Oh, nice. They're raw.
At plus 8,000, the Mets de Guanabo.
Are they Chinese?
No, I think the Mets are Wemby's team. I think that's Wemby's team from last
this
year,
is
if I'm
true.
Not mistaken.
And this is bad news for the Kings because I don't see the Spurs. So I don't see the Magic. I don't see the Sixers.
He's more likely to go to China than the Orlando Magic next year, okay?
Up a stinker, and you're going to China.
This is where it is the opposite. Like, this is where the Laker fans are great. This is where the them turning on their own players is it's the best, man. They're so good at just making you feel like, oh my God, we have a super team. We have the best team in the universe. And then the second things go wrong, it just
goes
to trash.
You gotta go.
And this is why nobody wants to play there, man.
It's
honestly
insane.
Because it's always their fault.
I can't believe that.
Oh my gosh.
And I was wrong about the Lakers being a little bit better than they thought. Oof. Or I was just ultimately wrong about the Nuggets. And the Nuggets, I didn't see a dynasty brewing, and we can discuss the definition of a dynasty.
Sure.
But as far as a back-to-back, I didn't see it, and I was completely wrong. Maybe it's because they weren't really a hole for a lot of the season. Jamal Murray is definitely healthy now, mm-hmm. and he's rocking and rolling. But yeah, they're a buzzsaw. And with the Celtics now having some trouble, the Celtics are a weird one where I don't know who I'll pick if it ends up being Celtics and Nuggets, even if the Heat give them a hard time. Because it might just be a styles make fights things and
exactly.
a mental thing where the Heat are just always going to give the Celtics a hard time.
Yep.
We'll have to see how the Celtics get there if they get there. But if it's not the Celtics, I mean, I think the Nuggets going back to back.
It's cooked, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of a Western Conference because OKC hasn't quite looked like their top level.
Yeah, the Timberwolves, sure.
Timberwolves maybe can give them trouble just because they have two bigs or three bigs, I guess, and sixth man of the year, Naz Reid. Let me not disrespect. That's right.
Can you stop? I think the thing about the T-Wolves is, can the Nuggets stop? And I know we had Timberwolves writers on this show who said that the offense is the problem.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like the Timberwolves, that's it.
I think the Timberwolves
are no one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They have the bigs. They have the other, like, if there's a star that's to the level of Jokic, as crazy as it sounds, I do think Anthony Edwards could get to that level this postseason to maybe, you know, to cancel that out, essentially. And then it's a matter of Karl Anthony Towns and Gobert. But I would agree that they probably are the team that's most suited to give the Nuggets trouble, because everyone else right now, I mean, Dallas and the Clippers, they both look about the same. They both look like if their stars are on that day, you could be in for a long night. But if the others are missing, then they probably don't stand a chance. So I definitely would agree. Nuggets 1, Timberwolves 2, and then it is kind of a mismatch of everybody else, really. I think you could put OKC in there. You could put Dallas even in there on the best given day.
Clippers, but it's crazy. Figure it out.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts. And you know what? Shout out our guy, Frankie. Let me shout out Frankie. I saw him tweet something very, very interesting tying into the Kings as well. Frankie put out here, the Sacramento Kings were in the mix for the 6-8 spot in the West during the final weeks of the regular season. So far, the 6-8 seeds in this postseason hold an 0-7 record in the first round of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you are who you are, and every season is different. Last season, records, the thing about the Lakers where they made that move, they made all those moves at the trade deadline.
They were a different team.
This season, there was a clear line throughout
line
the season.
For sure.
And that line has stayed true so far. A lot of these teams still need to go to their hometowns, but it did not help the Lakers in La La Land last night. Let's hear from Jokic when we return. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Jokic was asked, Chris, it's called the, I don't know if it's the term that they use or if it's just a term in general, the read and react offense, or that's just how they refer to it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like how the Kings run their offense. It's just essentially, you know, it's in the title. You read the defense, and you just kind of counter based off of how their defense is set up. And really, it's kind of a flow. It's just a different way of saying a flow offense, kind of like what the Kings have.
And when you face the Lakers, who don't really play defense, there's not really much to read and
that's right.
react to. Apparently,
that's
all
right. They have a bunch of counters that they haven't even gone to. Right, according
he
to Michael Malone,
said that.
Insane.
He said
insane,
that.
Which is a direct shot at Darvin Ham.
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane.
Honestly, so I'm sitting there with my better half when we're watching TNT. And this was the first time she had heard. A lot of times I don't really listen to the press conference if it's not the Kings
yes,
or whoever. And we're just listening to Darvin Ham. And Darvin, it was actually the way Laker fans make fun of Darvin Ham. I mean, he really does. He's talking
he
about
just
he just saying
so much fuel.
But what was crazy was some of the stuff he said we've heard before. He was saying,
right.
I mean, we put people in spots and it's a make or miss league. They missed open shots.
Mm-hmm.
We've
heard it before.
We've heard it before, and he's saying that, and he said,
"Well, I'm sure it's not all his fault." Yeah,
and he said it's tough, probably about 7 times. It's just tough, man. It's tough.
I mean, I will say in his defense, like, what a nightmare it must be to coach LeBron teams.
Yeah,
I think every coach would definitely say that it is not an enjoyable experience. You would think it's great to coach one of the best players of all time, but you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And when you have LeBron as your coach, it's championship or bust. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a 7 seed. It doesn't matter if you're an 8 seed. It doesn't matter if you made the play-in. It doesn't matter if you're a 2 seed. You have to win the championship or at least be in contention if you have LeBron on your team. And that means that, you know, everybody's job is always up for the line. And not just coach. Like, I think even for a dude like D'Angelo Russell, like, think about how tough it is to – you go into a season and everybody says, oh, yeah, that contract is just like it's built to get traded. Mm-hmm. Then all year long, you're thinking, okay, I kind of have to play well or else I'm going to be traded, right. But do I really even want to stay in this situation that's pretty toxic? And then he has a good month, and essentially it saves his Lakers career, and then he goes back to slumping, and it's just... It's a nightmare of a situation to be in. I mean, that's you know, it's kind of comes with the territory of being on a LeBron team. But, yeah, I mean, these guys have not performed nearly well enough either. I mean, to Darvin Ham's defense, I guess, you know. What are you supposed to do when D'Angelo Russell has 0 points?
Like, no, he has 0 points. I mean, there was such – and this is from Tim Bontemp from ESPN. He goes, I don't know anybody they're hiring that's doing a better job than Darvin Ham has done.
And isn't that kind of what we say about Mike Brown too?
I mean, it just
gets levels to it, Chris, for sure, but yeah.
There was a sequence where and they were up, this was towards the end when they started to lose the lead before halftime or close.
Right, and that's another thing too. They had the lead for three quarters, two and a half quarters?
But I'm telling you, Chris, D'Angelo Russell tried to get the ball, I think, to AD. Whoever was guarding him just jumped in the air and took it, okay? The Nuggets scored. D'Angelo, they came back down, or maybe the Nuggets did not score. Uh-huh. They come back down. It's basically a fast break. LeBron gives it to D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell takes an ill-advised three. It was a terrible three. He bricks it. The Nuggets get the rebound. They start their fast break. D'Angelo Russell, at about half court, reaches because he doesn't feel like playing defense. And the Nuggets just run down, and it goes from a 7-point lead, right, I think, to a 4-point lead, and Darvin Ham calls a timeout.
Yeah.
He's just not a winning
player. Is that
Darvin
Ham's fault?
Apparently,
you know.
Apparently, and there are a bunch of clips about AD not really paying attention to Darvin Ham. It's a mess, and it's always somebody else's fault. Yeah. All right, let's hear from the winning side of things and Jokic, what he had to say about just playing with guys and the process and how you get to the success that they've been having.
First was me and Gary Harris, then me and Jamal, then. You know, we had the group, and Jameer Nelson was here, Wilson Chandler, and those guys. Well, first of all, you need to learn how to play, and then when you get the core, then we add Mike, then we add AG, and then we add Casey. You know, you're just adding players that know how to play and know where to be. You know, and then you need to experience like two, three years together, just to learn how to play with each other. Then you're going to learn your teammates, where you're going to kind of read his steps, how he's going to go. If you go left hand, if you go right hand, you know, it's everything seems like, I mean, I think I know like what all they're going to do in certain spots on the floor.
And there you go. I mean, like it's almost like he's talking to Kings fans. There,
right.
Because,
right.
You know, and you know, raise your hand if you've heard the Kings building being compared to Denver, please. Because everybody is probably exhausted of hearing about the comparisons, but I mean, that's the model right now, and it's definitely the one that fits the Kings the most. Brendan has talked about it a ton. Like, you know, in a way, just the same way Jokic just laid it out. Like, you know, at first it was him and Gary Harris, and then after that, it's Wilson Chandler comes along, and then you run with that team for a couple years, and then you understand, oh, we need to get better at that spot and that spot, and then Aaron Gordon comes, and then Mike Malone comes, and then Aaron Gordon comes, and then KCP comes, and so it's a bit of it is a process of you gotta, again, I say it all the time, you gotta hit your head on the ceiling a couple times before you understand, okay, we need to change these specific spots up. And the only way of knowing exactly what spots need to be improved is by reaching your limitations with it. And, you know, I would say that in the same way, again, Jokic says Gary Harris turns into KCP. Right now, the Kings have Fox, they got Herter, they've got Barnes, Murray, and Sabonis. Clearly, we've talked all year long, that HB spot, no question, needs to be upgraded. I'm not 100% sold that Kevin Herter's spot has to be upgraded, but we can talk about that later. That those two are probably the spots that everyone's going to point to. The Kings need, this year was definitely the second year of figuring each other out. Next year, they're going to improve. I just think it's yet another example of we're so early in this process, we can't lose sight of that. And And you just have to continue to build upon the these pieces, and you can't be afraid to move on from some pieces. Like, and maybe you can throw Keegan Murray into that, but you have to always be willing to adjust. But at the same time, you have to give these lineups time to grow and to understand each other, because, you know, the Nuggets in year one are not going to be the same as the Nuggets in year three. And the only way of going through it is by seeing it and going through it.
But doesn't this mean that you're really, I guess the timeline is always a bit tough with these things, because don't you have to then relearn how to play with the upgrades, right?
I think the hope is that the upgrades, in theory, fit already. Like, you're bringing them in because they're already a seamless fit. It's just a better version of that player previously.
Because Aaron Gordon, yes, I mean, he went crazy last night.
You still are going to have to play some time with them. It's all going, and you know, that's the worst part about it, is all of this takes time. And, you know, if people are impatient, and I'm definitely impatient, but the only way of going through it is by waiting. And it's a long, long process that we're in, and we're only in year two.
Yeah, and I mean, you make some great points there, and of course, so did Jokic. The Kevin Huerter thing, yeah, we're going to talk about it so much. Throughout the offseason. Yeah. I like exactly what Jokic was saying, and that's the truth. And he gave flowers to some of the guys that he worked with. Yeah. I mean, from Jameer Nelson,
that's a TBT, right?
And that
there
was my guy back in the day. Definitely my type of player.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you know what I mean. And you had, you know, Gary Harris, who's now in Orlando, and different guys that have come through. One thing, Chris, you can't gloss over the fact that he did say Michael Malone. And that's not to say that it won't end with Coach Mike Brown,
absolutely,
but he did say that. We're not there, but that was brought up.
Hey, you can say the same thing about the Warriors, right?
Yeah.
We came up a couple years, had to figure things out, and then one of the things we had to figure out was, yes, the coach did need to be improved. And, you know, I don't know if we'll get to that point here in Sacramento, but it's not out of the question. I think I would definitely say right now is premature to let go of Mike
Brown. I would agree.
Absolutely. But no, that change might happen at some point. As a matter of fact, I can guarantee that Mike Brown is not going to coach this team for the rest of time. Mm-hmm. He's going to be fired at some point. It's the cycle of that job. At some point, every single coach is fired. Steve Kerr will be fired or let go from that position at some point here. And so, yeah, at some point, Mike Brown might need to be one of the things that is adjusted. But I think ultimately right now they should still be in the talent acquisition phase of it. And then once you feel like you have the proper talent and the coach isn't getting enough of that talent, that's when you make the upgrade. But right now, you know, I don't know if you would say Mike Brown is 100% maximizing the roster he has, but at the same time, like, it's not far off. Like, I don't think it's egregious enough to let him go right now.
When we return, we discuss the NBA games from last night, and also today, Joel Embiid putting up a 50-burger, also dealing with a condition, and it was a very eventful day for Joel Embiid yesterday. Oof. We discuss, and we also get into some Kings, and fair foul also at 1:15. You're not going to miss someone who had a little too much fun on draft night.
Much.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
From the 209, except Coach Pop. He doesn't get fired. Yeah, that's one.
Spoelstra.
Okay. Spoelstra for now. There's Pop. Spoelstra. We don't even know Spoelstra, but maybe you have Steve Kerr. I don't know. I really don't know how the Steve Kerr thing is going to end.
I mean, all of them end sour was my bigger point, is that nobody gets to walk off
Phil
into the
Jackson.
Sunset. But even Phil Jackson was pretty much asked to leave, and that was like a very
can you leave
contentious situation.
Almost identical to Belichick. Like,
exactly.
Asked to leave.
Right.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, hey, man, go read the room.
Pete Carroll was
asked
to leave.
And that was an age thing with Pete Carroll. I think.
You know, I don't know if they're. I don't think legally they can say it.
I maybe shouldn't have said that. Yeah. Ageism. Nah, listen, fine. I hate Pete Carroll. I hate the Seahawks. I don't want a lawsuit.
I hear you. Yeah, look, they're out there. It just doesn't happen very right. often. And what does happen often is Joel Embiid doing his thing when he's healthy, and he was relatively healthy last night.
And led
the Sixers to a much-needed victory. That what? Because Frankie was just talking about the Western Conference and what you said.
Yes.
So the Eastern Conference, the Sixers take care of business. And by the way, we had Jason Dumas of Con4 News. Jason left me on red. I tagged him on Twitter because I was real – as somebody who went to school in Philly, by the way – Philadelphia fans were upset at Villanova because Villanova gave a shout out to the Knicks because the three players went to Villanova.
I mean, what are you supposed to do?
And then after all that, now I sound like Karl Anthony Towns.
After all that?
That arena sounded like Madison Square Garden yesterday. There were so many Knicks fans in there. Philadelphia, you should be embarrassed. You should be. That was crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts. I didn't even know they traveled like that. I thought Golden One Center was the only place that could get split. But apparently.
You
know, it's a little train ride, right? Yeah. How long is that train? Is it like an hour?
I mean, it's not more than two.
Right.
Right. And I saw reports that Philly hadn't sold out, and then some Sixers fans said, oh, that's just people reset. Whatever the case is, that was bad.
Yeah, get your chickens in line.
That was bad.
That's not what you want.
And when you have Joel Embiid dropping 50 points and you pulled away towards the end, but it's pretty close the whole time, that is going to be tough. So, Chris, on top of Joel Embiid and what he's dealing with his knees essentially all the time, Joel Embiid, it came out yesterday, and it's always not funny, but it's always interesting when something was supposed to be held a secret, and then Woj comes out and says, the team didn't want anybody to find out.
Right.
But I found out in some way, somehow, that Joel Embiid, I guess it was during the play-in game, was diagnosed with Bell's palsy, which is a mild condition of Bell's palsy, which is a condition that causes sudden weakness in the muscles on one side of the face. Often the weakness is short-term and improves over weeks. The weakness makes half of the face appear to droop. Smiles are one-sided, and the eye on the affected side is hard to close.
Yeah, and like this has been something, if I know you've been seeing it on socials, but like this has been something that people have been tracking since really the playoffs had started. Mm-hmm. Joel had this really weird moment where I think he was at the free throw line. There was also one where he was laying on the ground and people saw on the broadcast and screen recorded or recorded their TVs, posted it on socials, and Joel couldn't blink. He was blinking like normal out of one of his eyes, but the other one was staying wide open, and people were like, what is this about? People were assuming maybe he was on like really intense painkillers that, you know, essentially numbed his face. And then yesterday, as the game was going on, people noticed essentially he looked like he was talking like Two-Face, like the Batman villain Two-Face.
Right.
Literally, almost like he had a stroke, half of his face just wasn't moving. And then you get the Woj report after. I wonder how much of it, crazy enough, Like you said, Woj, did this only come out because people had seen so much, and how much can you really deny it? I don't know if you saw as well, Joel in the post game after game two, he did the entire press conference like this with his head down and didn't, just kind of look like he was
when he was in his locker room, right?
Yes, he was at his locker and his head was down, and I think a lot of people just read it as, oh, he's disappointed. That was obviously after the Maxi gets bumped by Hart and DiVincenzo or whoever, Hart and Brunson. And so maybe he was upset about that. But, 2020 hindsight, he was probably hiding his face so that nobody could see it up close that something was clearly wrong.
Yeah. And, we're wishing him the best. It just kind of came out of nowhere. Yeah. Maybe it didn't. If you were paying closer attention,
sure.
A really bizarre game. He drops 50. The Sixers win. Everything comes out about his diagnosis. And he had a play, Chris. We got to be honest here. Mm. He probably should have been ejected.
Yes. Yes. And uncalled for.
Your insane. Boy had something to say, not about that, about something else, which led to Kings fans, media getting on one Draymond Green.
Of course, Draymond hopped in.
Draymond hopped in and said that it was a foul. They said Embiid got fouled, and it got flipped into an offensive foul. Mm-hmm. And Draymond was basically saying, "Yeah, this is. I mean, what are we doing?" He was kind of copying his boy LeBron a little bit. And then you had somebody respond, and I'm looking here. Somebody respond, and Draymond said, "You mean when Sabonis grabbed my leg?" So that just sent everybody into a doozy. And for Deuce Mason, a lot of people had some things to say to Draymond Green. I'm looking at all the replies, and yeah, it was pretty funny, Chris, how that whole thing unfolded. And Draymond just really can't help himself.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it just wasn't even close to the same situation either. Like, when Joel pulled down Mitchell Robinson yesterday, Mitchell Robinson was, like, in the air, either trying to get a putback or trying to grab the rebound. And as Mitchell is, like, in the air, Joel is pulling his ankles down onto Joel. So, like,
yeah, he pulled him
you
down.
Can twist your ankle.
And no, he did. He does have a diagnosed sprained ankle now.
Well,
Mitch Robinson.
Even, yeah.
But I don't think – I don't know that he'll miss or not.
Sure.
And there could be some gamesmanship here with the Knicks to say, hey, you're going to take a look at this. Who knows? Now, I have what happened. So this random – literally, as we joke, this is – when we joke about random users. So Draymond Green says, Joel sells calls. I get it. But that no call on the MIDI was wild with an emoji. Random guy, literally, JN31802. That's literally the guy's Twitter name. Says, but you have nothing to say about him grabbing Mitchell Robinson's leg in midair? LMAO, bleeping dirty bum. Draymond responds to him and says, you had nothing to say when Sabonis grabbed my ankle mid-run. Now, did you? And that's what sent Kings fans all into Draymond's mentions. Deuce Mason says, mid-run, stop it. You ever go back and watch a replay? You ran after the stomp. Now, Draymond is not going to spend time going back and forth, but I'm sure he understands the fact that he said that was going to light a fire under people with the Kings. But yeah, that he just can't help himself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what Draymond was trying to prove there.
Like, I'm not sure either.
Like, and it's just like Deuce said, I mean, it just wasn't the same thing at all either. Like, Draymond pretty much went out of his way to stomp on somebody. I know he says, where was I going to put my foot and all that stuff, but it was not at all equally created. It was not the same. And if you look at, if you look at that Draymond replay, you know, Sabonis definitely does grab towards him, but I don't think Sabonis's intention at all was to, hey, let me yank Draymond down here. And, you know, there was nothing, I really don't think there was anything dangerous about what Sabonis did or could have done, or maybe even was trying to do. Joel literally got this dude up in the air and tried to pull him straight down onto him. Like, dudes have twisted their ankles. I feel like you can break your ankle if you fall wrong onto Joel. I just think it was trash. I agree. Well, I think he should have gotten
it. It was really bad.
It was really bad.
Mitchell wasn't in the air. Joel was already, we can look at the replay. Joel was on the ground, and Joel's defense is that, kind of the stand over him thing. Joel grabs his legs as Mitchell is, I think, trying to get, he's still playing. And Joel just grabs him down. But maybe, because in the air, that would have been insane. But I think he kind of just grabs him. Hey, you're not going anywhere. And it wasn't I don't think it was to protect himself. It was just a bad look.
And there was a couple weird moments from Joel yesterday, too, where he's just flopping. And oh, no, he jumps in the air. I'm looking at it here. Mitchell Robinson is trying to get a putback. And Joel straight up grabs his legs
On
the way up.
I mean, he should have been ejected.
That's
he should have been ejected. Instead, he dropped 50, and now it's 2-1. Maybe that'll be on the last two-minute report. That's just how it goes. When we return, we discuss some of the NBA games that are happening tonight, also what went down last night, and a very interesting time when this whole thing came out in Los Angeles, the other team in LA. Well, FX is making a show about it. Hulu is. We'll play that for you. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.